This is a Ben Fred Friday. In just a moment, we'll visit with Ben Fredrickson of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. A reminder, the doctors of Blue Tail Medical Group, some of the nation's top experts in the fields of sports medicine, stem cell regenerative therapies. So when you hear about sports medicine, a lot of people are thinking the disabled list or surgery. Well, Doctors Bays, Crane, and Wolf, experts in stem cell regenerative therapy. Before you think about surgery, make sure you schedule an appointment today. They're considered some of the best doctors in the world, and we've got them right here in St. Louis. The number to call, 636-778-2900, 636-778-2900, or see what they have to offer at bluetailmedicalgroup.com. Ben, the Cardinals have reported now to Jupiter, Florida. Let's go through some of the, I guess, the burning questions for this team, but as always, good Friday to you. How are things going?
Happy Friday, Dan. Good to be with you. And yeah, good to see some baseball stories rolling out of Jupiter. I'm a little jealous of the photos, considering we're sitting around in the snow, but be down there soon enough. And good to have baseball up and running. I know it looks a little different, but you can sense the excitement, and that's something that spring training always has, even if it's a little more spread out with a little more easier to find question marks about how the season's going to go. But starting on time, and it sounds like the Cardinals are off to a good start with mostly everybody there. They got a few stragglers, but most importantly, it sounds like they're good to go on the virus front, which is the most important thing.
Absolutely. There's a bunch of things we can get into, and I guess just a simple question. What are you most excited about with this team coming into 2021?
Well, there's this guy named Nolan Arenado.
Yeah.
That I know not a lot of people know about. He's kind of off the radar for a lot of folks, but excited to see how he fits. But no, I think in all seriousness, like how he affects the lineup, I think is going to be really fascinating. We're all excited to see him play defense, but I think what Schilt does with the lineup with that Arenado-Goldschmidt combination is going to be really intriguing. Who hits leadoff? How does he help Paul DeJong? His impact on the lineup, I think, is going to be a huge story this spring. I'm curious kind of what could still be added by the Cardinals if they get that DH in. I know that it's probably like a 50-50 shot if negotiations will lead to that, but could they bring somebody in from the outside if they do get that? Could it wind up being a guy like Matt Carpenter if he hits, or maybe even a Nolan Gorman if he has a great spring? So curious what could be added to the lineup if the rule change comes in. And some intrigue there with Gorman maybe taking some reps at second base. And then, too, the rotation is fascinating to me. You and I are both, I think, big advocates for the depth on this team. But they basically took 13 guys to camp who could potentially start. Now, some are obviously more realistic than others. But, even with John Gant asking for a chance to get in that mix and Hennessy Cabrera, they've got a lot of really fascinating arms that are going to be pushing for what would normally be one final spot. But it sounds like they're maybe at least kind of toying with the idea of opening up a little bit more and having maybe a six-man rotation or some piggyback-type starts and basically trying to be flexible because of the innings pitched last year, the limited number available, and also – the fact that this season could get strange based off of schedule changes and things of that nature.
How about Nolan Gorman going to second base? I think that's going to be kind of fun to watch this spring.
Well, I love it. And I think first and foremost, it says the guy wants to play. And that's exactly what you want to hear from a player who is looking to make his breakthrough. He doesn't care where he plays. He wants to play in the majors. He wants to debut. This is a young guy who didn't get a chance to play in the minors last year. I mean, I think he got better and got great reps in Springfield, especially working with Jose Oquendo as much as he did down there. But he wants to play. And, he kind of joked about it on social media after they signed Arenado. Hey, can somebody teach me how to play second? But seeing him follow through with that, I think whether or not it pans out, it's a good sign of what he's all about. And if he can be a flexible player – then if he can hit, then they can find ways to use him. So I do think long term the DH will be in play, and that will maybe create some opportunities for him to get involved. But could he do it this year? Well, he's got to have a place on the field at where things stand right now. So if he can be a serviceable second baseman, then you could see him maybe getting some chances there. Maybe corner outfield too. I mean, maybe he becomes a guy who bounces around. That's kind of how Matt Carpenter broke in. So it wouldn't be crazy to see Gorman try to become that guy. I do think his defense has improved quite a bit at third base, so that would bode well for his transition to second.
Carlos Martinez, I'm going to give him the inside track for that fifth starter spot by what he did in the offseason, and I'm going to couple it with the fact that it sounds like the Cardinals want to be careful on the innings of Reyes. I had those two guys, at least in, and I know my vote really counts, at least those are the two guys I was looking at as the fifth starter, but I'm going to go with Carlos right now, at least the inside track.
I think that makes sense. The other thing that we got to mention here, I mean, let's just acknowledge the obvious, it's a contract year for Carlos. You know, he's trying to get paid, whether it's by the Cardinals picking up an option or by another team. If the Cardinals pay him to walk and pick up, you know, pay that option to go away, he's trying to prove he can do this, and he wants to do it in the way that he wants to do it as a starter. Personally, I'm going to put myself and believe it when I see it camp with him. I know he can be a great starter. He's been a two-time All-Star as a starter. It sounds like things went really well for him this offseason. I know he helped lead the Dominican team to a Caribbean championship, but I just don't know if he's sustainable enough physically to hold on to that role. So I think he's in the mix. I think the Cardinals would love it if that's the way it worked. They were clearly impressed with what he did this offseason. Talking to Gersh a couple weeks ago, he was pointing out that they really were pleased with how he pitched in that Caribbean series, which is a good note on Carlos entering camp. I'm with you on Reyes. It sounds like if they do give him that job, it could be a shared role. We'll see how that pans out. The other guy we should mention here, I think, is Ponce de Leon. I mean, he's had some rocky starts, but he's had some good ones too. And his strikeout stuff, I think, is improving. He's kind of quietly positioned himself to give this thing a go. And I think that he could be a name that we see mentioned more times than not as spring kind of gets off the ground too. He might have more of an inside track than I think some people think.
Yeah, maybe so. Time will tell. And obviously the big battle, I guess, would be left field. When you look at the young outfielders, we've been talking about this day after day after day, somebody having to step up. Now they clear Dexter Fowler out. I'm going to give Carlson in right. I'm going to give the inside track to Bader in center. And then I guess left field, I'm going to put Tyler O'Neill maybe with the inside track, but we got to wait and see how things pan out for spring training here.
Yeah, I'd like to see a lot of Lane Thomas in spring, man. I wrote a while back talking with Lane about what he was kind of feeling when he got back from COVID, and I'm really hesitant to read too much into what we saw from him last year because he was pretty messed up. We've seen Tyler O'Neill now about the same sample size in the past three seasons, and his offensive production has gotten worse every year. He did win a Gold Glove. He's a much better defender than he gets credit for sometimes, and he's really, I think, shifted perceptions about his play there. But he's getting a shot because he's supposed to hit home runs. He's supposed to be a power hitter, but that power has not been there. And a lot of people say, well, he strikes out too much. Well, that's not even the biggest issue now. It's that he hasn't been hitting for power. So I like that rate that Lane Thomas has where, it's a small sample size. He's had two seasons derailed, one by a freak injury. We got hit with a pitch, the other by COVID. But he averages a good amount of home runs per at-bat. I mean, he goes about 15 at-bats. Every 15 at-bats, he's going to hit a home run. And that's a major league rate. Now, can that hold up over time? I think it's worth finding out. I think he's got fast hands. I think he's way more athletic than he showed last year when he was playing through that kind of COVID fog. So I would like to see it be a true open competition there in left field. And throw Justin Williams in there as a guy who has a chance to maybe, get more time if he performs well. You and I have talked about Justin Williams before, kind of that long swing. You wonder how it translates, but he does have a knack for when he puts the bat on the ball, you hear it. I mean, he's one of those guys who, when he's hitting, you look up and go, who is that? Because he's making loud contact. And if he can do that at a consistent rate, then he could, I think, increase his stock in this competition too.
I don't know if you've looked at it, but I had to take a hard look at who's got options left and who doesn't, because there's going to be some tough, really tough decisions if they stay healthy in spring training and what they have to do with you know, who's going to make the rotation, then who goes to the bullpen. But there's going to be some really tough decisions to make this roster, and there's going to be guys that would be on a lot of other major league clubs, maybe in rotations, that don't make this team.
Yeah, I mean, just try to figure out who's going to be in the rotation, then who goes to the bullpen from there, and you can get into a headache pretty quick. And I think it's part of the reason the Cardinals are not adding a starter on the entering side of spring training. I don't know why I worded it like that, but there's a reason they're kind of slow playing this rotation talk, is because I think they kind of want to see who's ready. And if they feel like they don't really have a solid enough starting rotation, they could add somebody. But I think they want to see who can fill these gaps, because they've got these guys they don't want to lose and then see them go on and be great somewhere else. The other thing that's going to be a factor in the outfield discussion potentially too. So at last check, the Cardinals still don't know exactly if Justin Williams is out of options or not. It's kind of due to the way the last season worked, you know, the shortened year. It's kind of going to have to be a negotiated thing. I don't know if it's going to have to go down to like an arbiter or what, but they think he could be out of options this year. They don't have a definitive answer as of last time I talked to Mo about it. But if he is, then you have another reason to find a place for him in St. Louis this year, or risk losing him. So I do think that will factor into some decisions. I mean, at the end of the day, you got to go with who gives you your best team. But especially early on, you like to try to give guys chances before you risk losing them through waivers.
In terms of the Fernando Tatis Jr. contract, $340 million, 14 years. He has not played a full season. I think it's 143 or 147 games he's played in his career, and he gets that kind of deal. What was your just initial thoughts on hearing about it? And then now you've had a chance to really kind of break it down. What do you think?
Well, good for him.
I would say so.
Great.
Yeah.
good for the Padres fans. I mean, he's a hell of a player. He's fun to watch. He's an emerging face of the game, all that. I mean, to me, the thing I thought of was, my God, that's a lot of money. My God, that's a lot of commitment. And it's also interesting because the Padres didn't have to do it. You know, usually we see these deals with guys who are free agents, or, you know, they're threatening to leave. They're not happy, or they're, you know, they have leverage. He really had no leverage. He wasn't even close to you know, getting that big of a raise. So for them to do it now is really interesting. It clearly changes the market for, you know, for other premier players at that position. It makes the Ronald Acuna deal look that much worse for Acuna. I mean, great for the Braves, but it really is going to be that next contract that everything gets built off of. And kind of big picture, it makes you go, man, does San Diego have a printing press beneath the stadium? Like,
where's the money coming from?
Where's this money coming? Especially because that's a stadium, right, that where they play in California, you wonder if they're even going to have people in the stands. You think they would have more of a hard time just because of the politics of California. So credit to the Padres for going after the Dodgers, but what a big spin for a team that still, I guess, very well could finish second in its division in a year where there's so much uncertainty, not only about what the stadium, you know, could look like this year, but also what God knows what happens when the new CBA has to be agreed upon after this season. So I'll never knock a team for going for it, and they are. But, you know, this is going to come up, this claim from teams that they have no money. That's going to come up after this season when they're negotiating with players, and players are going to be wise to point to this contract and saying, what do you mean? You guys have no money. Look at the deals. Look at some of the deals that just got done.
It's incredible. And again, no fans in the stands. It's an okay TV contract, but it does make you wonder how much money is there. And you know, to further the point, if the Padres are able to do this, what's it say about the Indians getting rid of Lindor? What's it say about what the Pirates have done year after year? What does it mean for Trevor Story, free agent to be? And really just in general, the shortstop free agency class. I just think there's a lot of tentacles to this going forward.
Yeah, big. And that's a great point about these teams that are selling off. And, you know, it raises the question as what's the difference? You know, what's the difference between San Diego and some of these teams that clearly are making cost-cutting moves? Is some of it BS? And I think that speaks to kind of that, some of the distrust that we see between players and owners right now. People keep wondering, why didn't players agree to push back the season a month? You know, especially if they were going to get paid 162's worth of games. Well, because they thought that that deal would give Manfred more power to cancel other games. And there is, like, they just don't, there's a real level of mistrust. And you can see kind of some of the mixed signals going on within the game. The other thing, too, and I think this is how things will happen more moving forward, in terms of it being a smart deal, at least you're paying a guy prime money through the prime of his career. You know, guys aren't going to get paid these crazy dollars now to play like this into their late 30s because they know, teams know what the production says. So this is really a team saying, let's actually pay the guy for the prime. You know, let's not pay Albert Pujols to play into his late 30s on a staggering contract. You know, it would almost be like the Cardinals giving him a longer deal instead of the one that expired that sent him to Los Angeles. And maybe that's going to be the new thing now is, you know, guys get there earlier, they get paid bigger because teams don't expect them to play like, you know, superstars into their late 30s. And that's probably what going to be the result of what we see in this next CBA anyway. You know, guys who are younger and these young stars, they're going to get paid quicker, sooner. But guys who are 30 plus are going to realize that they missed or already got their big bite of the apple. And I think that's what the production dictates. So in some ways, the Padres are ahead of the curve. But it is always interesting when a team goes there without being forced there, because they clearly went there because they saw this as an opportunity to lock up the face of their team and be good for years to come. So anytime you see a 10 plus year deal, you wonder how it's going to pan out. But very curious move for a team that already had one of the biggest contracts in baseball with Machado.
I'm not saying he is, Fernando Tatis Jr., but I'm talking about the premise of what you just said, which is locking up young guys well before even arbitration years. What if Dylan Carlson goes out and has a really good year this season? And you've seen enough. You're the Cardinals. You're saying this guy is legit. We know he is a cornerstone piece to our franchise. The window to win is with Nolan Arenado, Paul Goldschmidt. Yeah, what do we think about Dylan Carlson? I wonder if that is even talked about, if that's something you think about if he has a good year.
Well, I think the Cardinals are always thinking about locking up guys for long stretches, young guys, you know, internally produced guys. I think they would like to get there with Flaherty. It's going to maybe a little trickier landscape there considering some of the recent clashes. Although I don't think it's out of the realm of possibilities, I think everyone who's assuming the Cardinals are going to trade Jack or that he's determined to leave via free agency are ignoring the fact that he's not scheduled to become a free agent until 2024. There's a lot that can happen between now and then. But, like, you know, what about Paul DeJong? I mean, I was thinking about Paul DeJong, right? If he has an all-star year this year, and he might, you know, now that he's probably in a better spot in the order because of the Arenado addition, maybe he has an all-star season, and then he's going to be a gold glove-type shortstop who is an all-star and is putting up, you know, should put up 25-plus home runs. His contract's going to look great compared to the recent uptick in what shortstops are getting paid.
It already does.
So, yeah, you could see how Carlson could be that guy. I mean, if he goes out and wins National League Rookie of the Year, I don't think that's a crazy thing to suggest could happen. He with what we saw last year and the fact that he's still going to be technically a rookie in 2021, I think the Cardinals are very keen on getting those guys. And it's a hard thing to turn down, too. Cost security now versus the unknown. It's a volatile game. And, you know, that's why everybody who's bashing Acuna Jr., you know, it's one thing to look at it in hindsight and say, man, if he would have held out, he might have gotten a deal similar to Tatis. But I'll tell you what, you put your tail in the chair and turn down multi-years and multi-millions of dollars. A lot of these guys who've never had that kind of wealth in their family, I mean, that's life-changing money. And it's one thing to say you want to be a free agent and you want to max out your earnings. It's another thing to actually turn down that offer when it crosses your desk, and not a lot of guys can do it. And I have a hard time blaming them.
Oh, me too. I think if you're offered that kind of money, you take it. Let's talk a little bit too, as we wrap it up, college basketball. Mizzou has got to get things going this weekend. They've got South Carolina, And SLU, a big game for them. They've got Dayton. So when you think about a couple of teams and trying to get positioning for the NCAA tournament, this is these are two big games for both these teams.
Yeah, big in a couple different ways. Folks are going to be listening to us talk about this Friday morning. Hopefully we'll know soon after the podcast drops whether or not Jeremiah Tillman is back. I think he will be. We don't know for sure yet, but Konzo, I think, will address it. We'll address it on Friday, so people should know soon. They got to get him back, and they got to get him back, and he's got to be right mentally. And if they can do that, then I think they can get back on track. South Carolina's a tough team, but not a very good team. And Missouri needs to just get back to doing what it does best. They've looked out of sorts with Tillman out, but that hasn't been the only reason they've been struggling. Xavier Pinson has played poorly. Their defense has not been up to snuff, and they continue to kind of have this bad habit of, I think, almost getting in their own heads when they get out to a certain lead. They kind of try to play differently, and it comes back to bite them. So most teams in the course of a season will drop three games in a row. It's the first time Missouri's done it. I do think people are maybe panicking a little bit too much, but if it gets to four in a row with a loss to a bad South Carolina team, then we're not talking about how do they protect their seeding. We're talking about, are they going to wind up on the wrong side of the bubble? So it's not all because of Tillman, but I tell you what, with how he's played this year, having him makes a big difference for this team. So we'll see. SLU, I think, has a chance to give a really nice statement win against Dayton. Now, remember, they didn't play for like a month when they were going through this COVID stuff. They come back, they lose to LaSalle, bad loss. They lose to Dayton first game back. Well, since then, they've rattled off four straight wins. They've beaten LaSalle. To go and beat Dayton, I think, would be a message to the selection committee that, hey, we're back, we're good. Don't read too much into those quad three losses that we had when we didn't go with a game for a month. Look at us now. And I do think the selection committee this year is going to have to factor in COVID into some of its decisions. The Billikens are in a decent spot in the net, kind of that 35-ish range, but it's not exactly safe. The projections have them some in, some out. They will have a big game against VCU, which would be a chance for another quad one win. But I think beating Dayton would be a sign that you can't read too much into those two losses they had when they got back from COVID. So they got to hope the selection committee has some common sense, which is never a good thing to bet on. But they have a chance, I think, add a pretty important chapter to their story on Saturday.
Ben, as always, great stuff. We'll catch you up next Friday. Thanks for doing it.
You bet, man. Sounds good, and have a good weekend.
You got it. Remind everybody on Fox 2 this Sunday, Scoops with Danny Mac, the TV show. That's at 10:30. My guest will include one Ben Fredrickson and also Mike Schilt. Long sit-down with Mike Schilt, who's down at spring training, the Cardinals manager. That's Ben Fredrickson. I'm Dan McLaughlin, and this is Scoops with Danny Mac.